in numbers as we speak.
Recording has started.
And I just wanted to start off our call with a real brief introduction because we do have a special announcement here at ATS this particular month, actually starting yesterday. As you guys all know, John Gaston was our consultant. We, of course, want to thank him for a year of dedicated service. He did have some bigger plans in mind for himself personally. He's not only going to be opening a new location and hoping to open several more over the past or the next year or so, but he's also going to be welcoming a new baby. So in light of all of those time constraints, he has asked us to go ahead and pass the baton on to a very special gentleman who has been on all of our calls, and that is Renchi Ali-Alvarigo. I'm sure you guys all know him. We're writing an editorial on him in the magazine this coming month, but in brief, he's been with us here as a dedicated client for many years. He has selflessly given up himself to all of our clients, really for his entire length of time that he's been a client here at the school, or at ATS. So I'd like to take just a minute to welcome him and let you guys know that he will be our lead consultant from this point forward. He'll not only be helping us out with these consulting calls, conference calls rather, but he's also going to be taking over the main brunt of the consulting helm here at ATS. So I'd like to thank him and welcome him.
Great. Well, thank you. It's an honor for me to be here. I hope everyone's out there is doing okay. Is everybody doing okay out there?
Yep. Great.
Yeah. We need to. First I wanted to just introduce myself for those of you who don't know me. And I come from a very traditional background in the martial arts, and I continually talk about my old teacher that I trained with, and he came from a very militant background, and I was brought up in what we kind of, in quotes, would say the old school kind of mentality of martial art training, where when I first had my first school, I talk about this in my public speaking, I had about a 700 square foot studio, which included locker rooms and bathrooms and office and sitting area, and I had about 20 really hardcore students. We didn't use mats, we beat the heck out of each other every single day. It was just one of those things where I was really under the impression that what I was doing was a service to people by teaching them the hardcore training that I was taught. And then I slowly began to realize, after having a meeting with one of my best buddies, Joe Puglio, from American Jiu-Jitsu Centers, and he actually taught me a lesson, which at the time I really kind of took as an insult, but at the end of one of my classes he watched, he said to me, what are you doing to help people? Are you helping people? Are you hurting people? And of course I was kind of offended, and I said, well, of course I'm training them to be warriors and strong individuals. In reality, I thought that I was doing the right thing. And then he says, well, wouldn't you be better off teaching the mass of people and helping the doctor or the lawyer or the mom or the accountant who hasn't trained in any physical activities for years? And that kind of annoyed me even more. But when I went home, I thought about it with an open mind, and I realized that my mentality in the martial arts had to be professional, and I had to teach people in a way that they could learn so that I could increase my enrollment, so therefore I could teach more people, help my students, help myself, help my family, and help all my staff members that are with me. And from that day on, I kind of changed my way of thought. And I know that there are probably a lot of people out there that are still clinging on to old-style values and old-style mentality somewhat or another. And this is what we're going to talk about today, is the keys to success. And I think it's a little confusing when we say success, because people have many different ideas on what success is all about. Are you guys with me so far?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Uh-huh.
Well, I wanted to talk about, the keys to success. It really, I think the most important thing, and this is what I had to do, and I had a huge struggle to decide. It was hard for me to make that transition where I said, okay, what is a success? Is a success selling out? Is a success somebody who is just, going commercial? And then I realized that I was commercial even though I only had 20 students, or whether I had 1,200 students. I realized that if I was charging a penny, whether it be a penny or $1,500 a year, I realized that I was a commercial operation. What I really had to realize was when I considered success, not selling out, was not sacrificing my integrity and the quality of what I do, and I needed to determine what that was. And this was a big step for me, because I felt guilty about charging money. I felt guilty about asking people to pay for upgrades. I felt guilty about asking people to buy gear if they said they didn't have the money. I felt guilty about all those things, and I had to realize that that's not how I can make my school grow, my business grow, and how I can make this a worldwide organization is what I built the school up to be. And that was a big stepping point. And I know that that was a problem for me, because I did have questions. I would constantly find myself falling back on you know, the old ways, saying things that I used to say, acting like I used to act. Even, as a matter of fact, my teacher was a Latino, and I used to train in the heart of Ridgewood, Queens, and I actually would, when I found myself teaching in West Islip in a primarily white community, I would speak with a Spanish accent, and as you can tell, I don't really have a Spanish accent. I'm not
Hello.
Latino, and I would basically talk that way
Hello.
During my classes. So I'm an error. And so basically I found that I was being my teacher. I was emulating what he was doing and how he taught and how he acted and what he did. And I realized that I was doing more damage by trying to be that individual and do what he did rather than doing what I thought was right. And I had to make a change, and that's what I did. When I made that decision to be a successful school owner, I had to make some determinations on what I considered success. And in as far as the success, there are many questions. Is a successful school owner someone who has many students? Is it someone who has a high gross income? A good billing check? Is it someone who has both of those? Is it someone who just teaches in a small little area who makes enough money, you know, to survive? You know, that's important that everyone must determine what a clear goal to success is, and that's what the first key to running your school is, to determine what is the key factor to growing. You know,
yeah, but how are we going to get back from the conference?
To being a school owner. So anyway, I hear somebody. Did someone say something? Have a question, or is someone just talking to somebody else? Are we still there?
Yeah, we're still all here.
Okay, mm-hmm. I'm getting a little bit of
There's a little bit of feedback.
Feedback and stuff like
people. Yeah, people just.
No problem at all. So I mean, now again, going on. You know, at first, the school owners. Every school owner, whether you have zero students or 1,200 students, you have to determine what your primary mission statement is. Do you want to have a worldwide organization? Do you want to have multiple school locations? I mean, it doesn't have to be right in the beginning, but you have to have a clear vision of where you want to be. Like Tony Robbins says, unless you're moving forward, you're moving backwards. So you need to determine and set your goals and make sure that you know clearly what you're going to do so that your students have direction of where they're going to be. So you have to set that up, and if you call yourself a black belt school, you have to know what a black belt school really is. Does that mean that you have values of black belts, or does that mean that you promote people to black belt quickly, or does that mean that your whole entire motivation is to do whatever you can, whenever you can, and however you can to get people to black belt? That's the key to the growth of a martial arts school, is to have a clear vision and a clear goal on what you're going to do. And again, you know, there are many levels to success. So is that teaching quality students? Is that profitability in you know, in your school, or making a living? Is it giving people, students, the opportunity to do what you do? Like, for instance, having a student go from white belt to eventually become a black belt and then eventually become an instructor. Is that securing a future for yourself, your family, doing what you love? And is it being able to do that for your staff and have them continually grow and have a huge amount of people around you that are doing what they love and teaching others? And, you know, that's what you need to determine, whether it is to have a successful school. And this is so important. Does anyone have any questions so far or not?
Yeah, I have a question.
Sure.
My question is, if you once you get someone to black belt, that's your goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of perceive black belt more than just a goal as far as getting as many people there.
Right.
It's actually a set of values, and I tell people black belt starts now, the day
yeah.
you walk in the door.
Sure.
And that's the attitude you have to have in order to become it. You have to act it first. But
yeah.
once you get them to black belt, how do you get them from black belt, say, to, you know, your master's club or...
Well, you know what?
Because most people, they don't see that far ahead.
Yeah, you know what the thing is? That I think that in the industry, years ago, we made a big mistake when we started Black Belt Club. I think Black Belt Club is a little confusing. But let's try to go back on that again, because, you know, we're saying Black Belt Club, and then we're asking a white belt to enter into a Black Belt Club, which it should really be just for black belts. Now, I'm not saying that I'm at fault, because I started this years ago. I had a Black Belt Club. Now I'm trying to find, you know, I'm developing my master's club and my leadership team curriculum. So, but people are saying, well, how come the Black Belt Club, that sounds like it's the highest level. Now, is the Master's Club better, or is the leadership team better? It's confusing for people to know where they stand.
Mm-hmm.
But in my school, we used to say, what's the quest? Everyone yells to be the best. And we'd say, what's our goal? And they yell out, Black Belt. Now we've changed that, because we get people now all year, 6 years in a row training, and they're yelling out, Black Belt. Now they hit their Black Belt, and they think that they've achieved the ultimate goal, and they end up quitting.
Right.
So now just a silly little thing we say is Black Belt and beyond. And we really need to get people to realize that black belt is just the starting point. It's just
right.
when all the fun begins. It's just that, you know, like you said, it's really black belt is just a metaphor. It's just a symbol of what all the teachings are that you give within your school that mean something, you know, all about respect and discipline, love and compassion, being able to defend yourself, being, for younger children, being polite and respectful and listening to their mom and going to bed on time. And you know, we could go on forever. All of us here in the room that own schools, we've given this speech probably a million times before. So I think the key to building that kind of school where it's beyond black belt, you start to have systems in effect, and we're going to go into that in a minute, to make that possible. Systems are the key, and that's where I'm going to step onto right now. I mean, to have a successful school, people don't realize how intricate it is as far as the machine goes.
Definitely.
You know, it's such a huge, huge undertaking. It's like, you know, in if anybody out there has ever read any Rob Kiyosaki's books, if you haven't, I totally recommend them. But he has a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and then he has a book, Loopholes of the Rich and Famous, and all these other books. But he has one called Cashflow Quadrants, which is an incredible book. So it's Rob Kiyosaki called Cashflow Quadrants, and he has this little thing, it's like a T line on a piece of paper, and he has four categories. And on the left-hand side, if you can envision this or visualize it, he has a thing for a E, for which means you're an employee. Then underneath it, he has an S for being self-employed, which most martial arts schools are self-employed individuals.
Definitely.
Then on the right-hand side of the quadrant, he has something which it says B for business owner, and on the bottom right-hand side, it says I for investor. It's our ultimate goal as martial arts school owners to, and I had a hard time with this, is step out sometimes as the actual teacher, as the person who's on the floor 24 hours a day, talking to every single parent, making sure that you're selling the programs, upgrading people, handing them their uniforms, promoting them, keeping track of attendance, doing We Miss You calls and all that stuff. You need to sometimes step out and start to get little sections of areas where you can train staff to take over certain duties for you. And then you start to move from each quadrant from being an employee to being self-employed. Then you step way over, which is a hard jump from being self-employed to being a business owner. Because being self-employed basically means you've given yourself a job. You've bought yourself into a job where you're the boss. And you have to listen to yourself, work for yourself, and do all the things. You're the cook, the cleaner, you know, you do everything. And if you can't do it all yourself, if people fall short, they show up late to work, you're the one who opens up. If they call in sick, you're the one to be there. What you need to do is start to develop a staff to take some of those duties off so that you can move into the business owner category and kind of be in an area where you could say, hey, I want to come up with this new idea, this new concept. I'm going to put it into effect. I'm going to train my staff, and they're going to go at it 100% and do it full out and make it work for me. That's the key to being a successful school owner, is to be able to see things from the outside looking in and watch over things and start to develop huge amounts of systems within your school to make the school run properly. Does that make sense so far?
It makes sense. And can you hear me?
I can hear you clearly.
Okay. A lot of that makes sense, and actually I'm doing a lot of the things you're doing right now.
Great.
John. And one of the things I look at is I've developed an instructor training program where I'm actually developing instructors and stuff like that, using a lot of the John C. Maxwell. I don't know if you know John C. Maxwell at all.
I've heard of him. I don't know him.
You might want to look into it. It's the 21 Laws of Irrefutable Leadership.
Right.
It's a really good book. It talks about how leadership is everything.
Oh, the book. You're talking about the author.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, I read the book.
Okay. And what I did is I started using some of those concepts into my instructor training classes.
Well, that's great.
And what I'm having a hard time finding out how to keep people motivated, how to keep classes exciting, how to get them to be doing what they're doing, which I do pretty successfully, but I want to keep growing that process.
Well, let me ask you first. Can I without any numbers, just like what is your enrollment at right now? Like how many students do you have?
Yeah. Well, before the summer hit, I was about 80 to 100.
Okay, that's not bad though. That's pretty good. Go ahead, I'm sorry, finish off.
My other question was, you know, how do you develop the staff? Because when you have staff, a lot of times you have to pay that staff.
Right.
You end up a blend between volunteer staff and and paid staff.
Well,
and you're trying to figure out, like, how do you get the correct balance? How do you find the right type people, what they talk about is the right fit, you know?
Okay, well, let's definitely go back to that for staffing issues, because that's a question. And if anybody has questions out there, please just chime in and ask me, and then we'll put it on and we'll talk about it. But I wanted to talk about, I will definitely talk about the I have a black belt instructor training program as well, and I'll tell you a little bit about that I have. And that's going to be, I'm going to plug my the APS website, and my website is called takingittothenextlevel.com. And I have two videos that are out that you guys, if you're interested in getting, they're available. But this is a free website, and it has a premium section to it that you guys can eventually sign up. And it's kind of like one of the best things that you guys will ever be interested in, because it takes each school from step to step to step. For instance, you know, I've seminared my way through learning, and over the last 15 years, I've gone to, you know, thousands of seminars, and I've spent thousands of dollars. But what I do is I go to these things, I get a huge amount of information, I have stacks of notes that I've taken, and then I say to myself, which ones am I going to put into effect? Which one should I do now? Like, when I had 30 students, I tried to do a black belt club, when I should have been concentrating on other things. And now we're talking about staffing, staff-related issues. Mm-hmm. You need to know when you should implement these kind of systems in order to get the school to be a huge success.
Right. And I found myself right now is that at the load I am now, it's very, you can't do it alone anymore.
No,
you have to multiply yourself.
Right.
And you know, that's times the problem, because you know, people come and go.
Right.
And you're constantly training and retraining people. And the key is not to train your competition also, and that's another thing you have to look at.
Well, you know what? I look at it like this too. Again, if you have a good staff, you know, and you compensate them, then they have no reason to become your competition.
Sure.
In other words,
I
have eight schools internationally, five on Long Island. I have three out of the country, two in Costa Rica, one in Bermuda.
Wow.
And I'm just saying that because my staff members, and I have a continual amount of people that go through and become part of our team. Eventually, once we train them fully, they go out and we open up a school. And I own every single school, so it's not like people are open up and they become partners.
Right.
They go out and they become part of our staff. And why would they want to open up their own school when they have to go through everything all again on their own? They'd have to learn how to market. Or even if they knew all that, we have everything available to them.
You know what? That's funny when you bring that up, because when I try to get someone that wants to maybe run a school for me, they want to own the school.
Right. Well,
or they want to be a partner.
You need to know. You need to see if it's worth it to them. You know, owning a school, as you know, having 80 to 100 students is not an easy task.
No.
And it's not like you're throwing tons of cash in your pocket every single month driving around in a Ferrari. You know, you need to work hard. So they're going to go out there and they're going to have to start from scratch and do that same thing. But if you eventually have built up your school, your headquarters school, to be, you know, 400 or 500 students, and
right,
you want to branch out and you have some extra capital and you could do that for them, having all your systems in effect, then you could do that. But I totally, without a shadow of a doubt, do not recommend for people to go into multi-school ownership unless their first headquarters operation is fully maxed out at a huge amount of profit. They have a great staff training development program.
Yeah.
They have all these systems in effect.
Yeah, those are the things I'm trying to work on, and I'm also looking at trying to get enough capital up to actually buy my own building instead of renting.
Right. That's a great idea. But, I mean, again, with being a successful school owner, to all the people that are out there, you need to have systems in effect that, from what I would recommend is just to grab a pad. Before you walk in your school, have a notepad and a pen, and from the minute you take your key out of your pocket, you write it down. You reach in your pocket, you take your key out, you slip it in the door, you write down, number one, open up door. Number two, set off alarm, turn on lights. Number three, check all the bathrooms. Number four, blah, 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 clean up, get ready. Number five, check your messages on your answer machine. Number six, return all the calls. And then you go on and on and on and on. And then once you have all your daily functions, do that for a week, because that's going to change every single week.
And we have done that already.
Yeah, and once you do that, you'll have all of that set up. Then you need to go back and start to develop systems so that if you are sick for a week and you want your brown belt to take over, he could just take that notepad and say, number one, put the key in the door. Number two, turn on the lights. Number three, turn on the alarm, and so on and so forth. Then you have to have systems in effect on how to answer a phone properly and how to yield a trial class, how to set them up into a trial class. And it goes from step one all the way to step 100, and it's got to be spelled out for every single person so that you want to make it idiot-proof and make it so that everybody could do it.
Sure.
And that's the biggest problem. I find that people still don't follow their own systems. Millions of people that are out there that are doing martial arts, they go to schools, and you'll find that the school doesn't have a good retention program. I think the key to having a successful school is, one, to have a dynamic and interesting curriculum, and it has to be easy to learn, and it has to keep people interested. It has to be good for the people to learn and stay motivated. Like you had said, you need to be able to teach motivating classes. You're having a struggle with sometimes keeping people motivated. That sometimes lies within the curriculum and your teaching methods. The other thing, of course, is to have systems for everything for a growing school, from anywhere from answering the phone all the way on up to doing other things like follow-ups on retention, 2-4-6 week calls, referral calls, sales calls, we miss your calls, all those things. And you have to have a staff that's fully capable of doing that stuff. You can't have a guy who's out just making calls but getting no results. You need to train your staff. So anyway, does anybody have any questions, or can anyone chime in or any ideas? Because I need to have this as an interactive kind of conversation.
Hey, Ali, why don't we go around and see how many people we think. First of all, I think, one of the things that's really important is everybody has to kind of figure out what level they're at right now,
right,
and
absolutely,
where they're missing.
Well,
so why don't we
first,
go around?
How many people do we have online today?
We have about 19 people on today.
Wow, that's exciting. That's one of the bigger ones.
Mm-hmm.
And now,
you know what I found, John?
Well, this is Allie. John's my best buddy, but he's not here. I don't know. Yeah, this is Allie.
Oh, Allie, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
John Grayson. Allie, what I found was I really like to be involved in these phone calls, but
right,
during the normal business year, I have my after-school pickup program.
Sure.
So what happens is your calls always start right in the middle of time when I got to go pick up.
Well,
kids.
You know what? We've already taken that into consideration, and
yeah,
Joanne and I and Jeff, we're going to do two different times. We're going to do an early afternoon time like this, and then we're going to do a later time on a different day in the evening.
Yeah.
And Matt, is this Sean Racky who's speaking?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
One of the things that I've been impressed by.
The troublemaker.
And then also, too, Joanne, if I could say so as well, we're also going to be doing some call-ins where you could call in Spider Phone,
mm-hmm,
and you could just call in, and I'm going to have a pre-recorded topic that we'll talk about probably 2 to 3 times a month on certain things like, summer camp or whatever it may be.
You know, I love this. This is great. This is great. It's a good brainstorming session.
Awesome.
And one of the things I was thinking about is, what if you move the meeting down to like 12:30 or something like that, where, or 12 o'clock or 11 o'clock? Because, anybody that's in martial arts school, that between 4 and 8 o'clock, you're dead in the water.
Right.
Okay. Well, one of the things that not to interrupt everybody, but if you guys have comments about when you want these conference calls, I think I've on every single conference call, I've actually asked people to let me know, and I've asked through emails for people to make suggestions. So if you guys need to make suggestions to me, or you want to make a comment about the conference calls or request that we change times, I need to know when the best time on average is for everyone. So
yeah, definitely.
As many people as can get on online and just go to consulting@apsfinancial.com and send me an email, we will do our absolute 100% best to accommodate as much as we can.
We're going to be offering a lot more, as well as, anybody, like I said, could go to our website, takingittothenextlevel.com, and there's tons of free information that you could download.
Yeah.
There's articles on all different topics, so please take advantage of checking that site out. And it's a new site. It's just going to get better and better and better, so that's all going to be part of what APS is offering, so it's going to be phenomenal.
Okay. So I think, Allie, one of the things we should do to make this a little bit more interactive, and I'm interested to know, what people's perceptions are of where they are right now, and where we think that, from your wisdom, where you think they are and what you think are the most important tasks in moving to the next level.
Okay.
Does anybody want to shout out to me where they are right now with level? Really, who here on this call has about 0 to 50 students at this point?
I do.
Okay. So there's one person that answered, but maybe other people are not saying anything. But
what's the question again? I didn't get that.
How many people have from, and of course zero is a very small, insignificant, but it's like if you guys are just starting to 50 members.
Yeah, I got 25.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I was on listen-only mode, I guess, so I didn't get a chance to chime in. We've got about 350 here.
Okay, 350.
Okay. Anybody else?
We probably got 300.
Okay, good. Another big school.
Yeah, and like I said, I thought you had between 80 and 100, but I'm trying to figure out how do you get past that number.
Well, we're going to help you with that. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
We have about 80.
80, okay.
140.
140.
210.
100, 210. Do I hear 200? No.
Fold.
Yeah. How about from 0 to 50? Anybody out there?
We got
25.
25, okay.
We're talking about a half.
I think that it's important to know that at each number that you get to, there's different goals that you need to be looking at.
Let me just explain something to you about, and again, what I've gone through in the past.
Mm-hmm.
When I was growing my school, I back 15 years ago, the martial art industry really didn't have much to offer. It was just people like Andrew Woods and guys like that just coming out with some technologies on business practices and putting it into the martial art industry. I mean, I fought it tooth and nail. I said, oh my God, this guy's selling out. How dare he? Martial arts is all about being a warrior. And then I realized, like, hey, listen, I love this stuff. I want to make a living at it. I'd like to make it, be able to do what I want, you know, for a living and be successful at it. And then I started to study and read books and go through all these different phases of my life, and I learned a lot by my mistakes. But what I have found is that no one that's out there in the industry right now is mentoring people at the level that they should be. For instance, on this conference call, I could talk about all the things I'm talking about, and the guys with 350 and 300 students might be saying, this is old news. I already do all this stuff. But then there are guys out there that have 25 to 100 students. They're saying, wow, I'm not doing this, this, and this.
Right.
And then, you know, all the people in between. But the key, though, is I think even me, I have 1,200 students in my local schools.
Wow.
And I think the key is that I just had a staff meeting today where we sat down, and I'm still going over with my staff some of the basics that we know that we should be doing, that we should have done all along, that they're forgetting. That they have to go back and say, oh, yeah, that's in my notes. I remember that when I had 50 students, but now I have 250. I forgot. I'm not doing that anymore.
Son, how often do you have your staff meetings?
I have a staff meeting every single Monday. Well, we had a holiday. We did it on Wednesday, and it's a three-hour staff meeting, and I had 14 of my main staff members here. And then I do another one every other Thursday, which is a training staff meeting, which is like on sales on the phone, cold calling, whatever it may be, every other Thursday, so two times a month on that.
How long does that one last?
That one lasts about an hour because it's in the evening, and we don't want to burn people out.
Okay.
Yeah, so that, you know, that's important, and I think that, you know,
it's the missing link.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think that people, the biggest mistake that people make is that they sometimes pass the torch and say, okay, I want you to do this, this, and this, and the person says, okay, and they take the torch, and then they flounder sitting there going, man, I don't really think I'm ready for this. And then I think the key to success is to train your people properly. I mean, if we want a black belt to be able to perform and do all their moves, do all their kata, to perform all their self-defense and weapons, and we just said to him, here, do what a black belt does, and we set him off in the room by himself without years of constant nurturing and fine-tuning and adapting and changing and fixing and fine-tuning some more, that person will never, ever get to the level that they should be, and they're going to be a mediocre black belt. But as martial art instructors, we fine-tune them continuously, but then when we have staff members, we kind of give them the torch and we say, let's run off, and I'm looking for you to succeed and make, you know, 20 trial class calls, and we're not really training our people the way we should be. So staff training and staff development is like, it is the backbone. It is the key to success in your school. And I know as I get older, I'm almost 40 years old, and I don't want to be teaching every white belt class. As a matter of fact, I only want to teach black belts now, and I'd like to do it maybe 3 days a week and then spend the rest of the time with my beautiful wife and my beautiful daughter and enjoy life, because I've worked hard for the last, you know, 25 years doing this stuff. I don't want to kill myself every single day of the week, and I know none of you do as well. You know, so we need to start to train our people. And, you know, that's the key is to ask. You know, if you have 50 students in the dojo, I guarantee you have 5 or 10 people that will want to help you in some capacity. They just would love to do it for free, probably. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Makes sense.
You know, go ahead.
My question is, you know, we do a lot of that stuff already. We have, like, team leaders.
Great.
We have, like, squad leaders, and then we have one, you know, try to talk about the law, the big picture.
Right.
And talking about having one head person on the floor
right.
that runs the whole floor, and then you have, you know, your junior leaders and stuff
sure.
like that help run the class. I don't know if anybody else does that
yeah.
or not.
Yeah, I have Melody has a great program. Melody Schumann from Schumann Concepts has a great program that she's putting out, and we have a huge team leadership character development program that
yeah.
we've just developed.
And the thing what I find is that, you know, you get a lot of parents that are like, well, I just want to be taught. Well, how many classes are you going to teach? How many
right.
classes is Master so-and-so going to teach?
Well, you know what,
you
though?
Know, and so how do you get away from that dogma where people like are
well,
not,
what was your enrollment?
Between 80 and 100.
Okay. Well, that's your problem right there, and I'll tell you why. Because right now your school is what we call a personality-driven school.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not your fault, because how could it be anything but? Because you're the one who started it. You're the one who taught the majority of the classes. Mm-hmm. And you're the one who's there all the time. When they open
right.
the door, they see your face every day.
Right.
I had that same problem, and I'll tell you, it's kind of funny, because I had two of my black belt kids about maybe 8 years ago. The parents came to me and said, you know what, you don't teach as many classes as you used to
right.
when we first joined. And you know, she was totally correct, because when I first started, I had 22 classes. Now I offer 78 classes a week.
Wow.
So, you know, I said to her, no duh. You know, do you expect me to teach 78 classes? I said, I can't be there for all those students, and no one wants to teach 78 hours a week. You know, so it was obvious that they started off in the school when it was new, and they were
right.
used to me being there every single day. But
right.
what I did was I changed my school from being a personality-driven curriculum or a school to having a bunch of really quality staff members that are kind of changing here and there intermittently, teaching different classes, so that the people are not looking for this teacher, but they're looking to learn the curriculum. But what I had to do was develop an instructor training program so that my instructors, no matter who they were, whether it was Joe or Tim or Rob, they had to be all the same quality with the same mentality, using the same verbiage, the same words to get the points across, so that when a kid went, whether it was a shy little four-year-old or a confident 15-year-old, they got the same exact feeling in every single class that they attended. Of course, certain people will like a certain individual. They'll just connect with them.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have to have him every single day of the week. So you need to somehow start to slowly break away from the personality-driven kind of school, and maybe you be the guy who sits behind the desk a little and have a guy take the class for 15 or 20 minutes and teach a little. And then you kind of build those students up so that they feel confident and they start to develop their own charisma and personality. And then your school becomes, I mean, I'm a dynamic martial artist. I've been doing it for 36 years. But I have instructors that teach for me that are my employees and my students that are just unbelievable, and they have
right.
a great personality. So I'd rather say, wow, I made those people as good as I could make them. Now they're out there building themselves up, and people love them because of it. That's what my organization is, why I have 1,200 students, because of that, not because, you know, it's me. As a matter of fact, some people don't like me. You know, they just don't get along well with me because I'm pretty
right.
much set in my values and my mentality. So some parents don't get along. I'd much rather deal with Sensei Tom or Sensei Frank. You know, so it can't be a personality-driven kind of thing. Makes sense?
Mm-hmm. It makes perfectly sense. It's just trying to convert to that mentality and getting the group to accept that,
yeah.
that concept.
Well, sometimes acceptance is not, you know, don't look for acceptance. Sometimes, you know, you need to just do it, and then you may have, like, you know, I raised my tuition 45% across the board this year.
Right.
And I thought I was going to get a backlash of people. I had maybe like 6 people quit out of all my students.
Right.
And you know what? I worried about it more so that I gave myself, you know, I was upset more than any other person was. They didn't even bat an eyelash because they knew that the program was worth it. Sometimes you just got to rock the boat, and you just got to make decisions as an owner and say, listen, Mr. Smith is going to teach on Tuesday nights. I'm not teaching that class anymore. Eventually, you'll grow into an organization where you'll just be able to train your specialist black belt instructors and do these things. This was my dream, you know, to teach only black belts in a black belt mentality and in a black belt setting where I didn't have to worry about all the other things.
My other question is, how do you, you know, you get a person that, you know, you get, I don't know if you understand the soccer mom
yeah.
mentality,
uh-huh.
where they come, they're used to coming Monday, Wednesday, Friday to
right.
stay,
right.
or they're in an after-school pickup program. And I have a beginner's class
mm-hmm.
Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then I
right.
have an advanced class right after that. And so eventually they get promoted to advanced class.
Right.
And then what I do at that point is tell them they need to go to the advanced class and also come to beginner classes, because when you test for black belt, you know everything.
Right. Well,
and so how do you keep, you know?
Well, I think, let me give you my opinion, and please, everybody who's online,
yeah.
never take me the wrong way, because I don't think that what I say is the only way, but just sometimes I, you know, even my wife will tell me that I come off thinking that, sounding like I think that I'm the end result and that I think that I know it all. But what I'm just saying is the only way I could be confident about what I do is giving you my opinion wholeheartedly of how I feel. I feel you shouldn't have your students be able to flounder from class to class.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that you should have a student that is a white belt training with a black belt unless the black belt is coming to help in a white belt class. For instance, in my school, I have every single rank, every single age. We have 3 to 5-year-old classes. We call them our little ninjas. Then we have 5 to 8-year-olds. We call them our mighty ninjas. Then we have our 9 to 14, and then sometimes 15-year-olds if they're small, and then we have 16 on up to adults. And then every single class, we have a beginner class, which is our beginner and white belts and yellow belts. Then we have our intermediate class, which is green and blue. Then we have our advanced class, which is purple and brown. Then we have our black belt classes.
Mm-hmm.
So there aren't, you know, you don't want, like, Mr. Jones, who just started training and seeing a black belt throw a jumping wheel kick, and him saying, I'll never be able to do that.
Right.
You want people to be in with their own people, within their own level, within their own mentality.
Right. Well, what if we take a lot of those, I think you misunderstood what I was saying.
Yeah.
Is when people get promoted to the advanced class,
right.
a lot of times the parents go, well, I don't want to go to that time. You
right.
get people that get used to that one time, they
right.
don't want to bend.
Well,
and then you try to get people over that hump.
Yeah, you know what?
And then you talk about, like, what I have those advanced students do is one of the things you do is you have those, one of their responsibilities as an advanced student is to come help teach
right.
as a junior instructor to
right.
the lower class. So that when they go to that lower class, they're not going there to train their techniques at
right.
their
level.
Right,
they go to teach and help out.
Right.
And that's a lesson for them as well.
Exactly.
Well, let me tell you, the only thing that is inevitable in life is change.
Right.
So there's no way around that. So these people have to get used to the mentality. And listen, if they're a soccer mom and they're baseball dads or whatever it may be, they're used to change. They're used to practices changing. They're used to the schedule changing every year. The kids go from Little League to T-ball to whatever it may be. They change continuously. So if they tell you that they don't want to change, they're just telling their voice and their opinion because it's more convenient for them not to. But if you tell them that they have to, then they'll... But the majority of them, 99.9% of them, will go with you and change with you. Of course, there's going to be certain situations where a parent or a dad may have a job where he's only got a two-hour period of time before he goes to his second job, and he's a single dad, and there's no way that if you change, he's going to have to move to a different school. Well, then you make a special accommodation, and you work with that one individual. But don't let the mass of the people, you know, tell you what they have to do. You got to just basically set the rules and say this is the way it is, and you step up from first grade to second grade to third grade all the way on up
right.
to high school, and that's just the way it is in your curriculum. We're no different than a regular school system.
Can I add something to that?
Sure.
When you're talking about, you know, your time, people want it different times. I think I get over. I have the same problem, but I get over that on the very first day when they sign up. If that's an objection, they know about that.
Right.
When they sign up.
Right.
Right. I show them the schedule when they sign up.
Yeah.
That's good.
You know what though? Let me tell you about parents. And I'm a parent, but I mean, I hope I don't fit into this category. And I can almost attest that 19 of you that are online right now will say, you know, you could look them straight in the face, you could hand them a flyer and then email them a calendar, and they'll still show up on the day that you're closed and say, I never talked to you about it.
Right.
You know, and they'll say to you, why, Mr. Smith, weren't you there? You never told me this. And you say, I tattooed it on your forehead. Look in the mirror, and they'll swear to you that they don't see it. And it's
not message boards everywhere, and you give them flyers, and they still forget.
You know what? It's not. You just understand. I used to always have a line that I would say, these people just don't get it. These people are stupid. These people are this. These people are that. What I realized was, all they are is caught up in the mix of being people. They're in a busy world.
Oh, yeah, they're overloaded.
They're overloaded. And you know what? It's overstimulation for parents and children. What we need to do to be successful is become masters at getting our point across to people. Like if we want to upgrade people, do you think we should talk to them once or twice or three times? We continually work on them until they upgrade. When we want to get people in our black belt club, we don't, you know, if they say no the first year, we continually work on them until they are eventually in our black belt club. And we got to get the point across. So some of them, they may not be seeing, like somebody said before about black belt mentality. We say that sometimes you look through black belt glasses. You know, we're all martial art instructors. We see the Asian philosophies. We see the mentality that we teach. But sometimes parents, they're coming from a whole other world. And even students, they're coming from a whole other Western kind of culture. And we're trying to instill this kind of martial art discipline and Eastern philosophy on them. It's not going to be easy. Our job is definitely a difficult one. Make sense?
Makes perfect sense.
You know, so, you know, continually getting our schools, you know, we said, how do we become a success? Back to when we started saying, okay, well, what's your definition of success? You know, is it having a school that makes a lot of money? Well, if that's the case, have 200 students and charge them $400. I know that sounds silly, but you could do it. All you got to do is have the right program in effect. Some of us, I've found myself struggling going to my staff. What are our numbers? Are we at 450 or are we at 475 in this location? And then I said to myself, my wife years ago had come home and she was all excited. She said, I just got a raise at my job. They raised me 2.5%, whatever it was a year, $5,000, $8,000 a year. I said, wow. And that was good for us. And then I said, you know what? I'm going to give myself a raise. I looked at my 300 students at the time or whatever it may have been. My numbers aren't accurate. I'm just saying. And I said, okay, I'm going to raise everybody $5 a month times 300. That was, you know, whatever, $1,500 a month times 12 months. I just gave myself a $30,000 raise. And again, don't hold me to my numbers. I'm just spouting numbers as I talk. And, you know, it's really all about how you want to do that. If you wanted to make more money rather than charging $30 on a set of fighting gear, charge $33. People are not going to make much of a howl about that. As long as you're not ripping them off and they can't go to the internet and get it for $10, If you charge $33, they know they're going to help you by growing your school. They know that they're going to be, they don't have to pay shipping charges. They know that if your tuition is $33 a month or $103 a month and the guy down the road is only $100, they know that you're the best studio in town, and they know that you care about the kids, and they have a connection with you, and the kids have a connection with you. Do you think they're going to run away? They're not going anywhere. That's what we need to establish, and that's why you have to set out these clear ideas about what you're all about. Mm-hmm. Any comments, questions?
My question is, I don't know, probably everybody else on the line is probably feeling the same way. You want to maintain high quality.
Right.
But you definitely want to maintain, you want to make a living at doing it.
Right.
You know? I find that I'm in an area of the country that does not have a high income bracket, and people fighting over, you know, nickels and dimes.
Yeah, well, don't buy that for a second, but I'll explain to you why.
What you try to do is you try to get a reasonable product for a reasonable amount of money, and then you realize that, you know, your cost is so much. You know, you're talking about cash flow.
Sure.
And you're figuring out how many students I need to break even, which I've pretty much broke even for a long time. It's just a matter of now paying a couple part-time employees and now trying to pay yourself and then, you know, using the corporation to help pay off some of your expenses.
Sure.
That kind of thing. But trying to figure out how can you drive more business into your school and how many, you know, there's a lot of questions I have, you know.
Okay. Well, let's first go into the pricing thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, and now there is no doubt in my mind that there are certain areas that, you know, you might be in Hollywood, you know, Los Angeles, California, and then you might be in Costa Rica where I have a school.
Right.
Every time I've ever approached any one of my instructors that teach with me, whether it be in Bermuda or Costa Rica or Long Island or some place, we have satellite schools in all different places like Maine and so on and so forth. They've always come to me and said, my area, especially in Costa Rica, my instructor would say, my teacher teaches for me there, would say, well, Costa Ricans are different. In Bermuda, they go, well, Bermudians are different. And I said to them, please do me a favor. Charge what we charge in Long Island, and do me a favor and try it for a year. If it doesn't work, let's go back and we'll start again at a different, and we'll reattack it in a different way. Well, I've found that every single time after their negativity and after their resistance, they've tried it the way we've tried it. They've gotten the people to immediately convert into that rate, even if the people are in an area where it's so-called a depressed area. Now, I can almost guarantee you that a lot of the parents will tell you and look you in the face and go, I don't want to spend $150 a month on martial art training. But they'll say to you, I can't afford $150 a month. Then you look down at little Junior's shoes and see that he's got a pair of $90 Nikes and that he's holding in his hand another $120 or $80 video game.
Right.
So it's not that they can't afford it. It's that they haven't found the value in what you have to sell, and you haven't gotten that point across, and as well, they're not willing to part with that money at this point. So you need to work on that area. And
well,
one
thing I look at is we secret shop, you know, like you tell us to do the area. And, you can only charge what the market bears. I mean, you can't go over what they do. And actually, one of our competitors is going out of business because they did that exact same thing.
But they do.
Their price is way beyond everybody else.
I would bet you they're going out of business because they're a terrible martial arts school. I would bet you that it had nothing
to
do with
it. And they had, and actually what happened was their school fractured into a couple different other schools.
Well, there you go.
You know.
Well, you see, don't compare yourself, because let me tell you, I have in my area, in my town where I run my headquarters school, I have five schools within a three-mile radius.
Oh, me too.
Now, but let me tell you, though, I am the highest cost out of all of those schools. I am the only one that's doing contracts except for one other school that has yearly commitments. And I don't take any crap from anybody. And right now, I have the largest school in all of this area.
Yeah, that's one of my other concerns. I worry about a bad reputation for enforcing contracts. If people come in a month or two and they sign for a year.
Right.
And then they want to get out of the agreement, and then they start doing everything they can, like changing their phone number.
Right.
Let's
go back into, you were the one who said about pricing, about quality, about breaking even and all that other stuff,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about quality of instruction, when you said that other school closed down, I would almost guess that school that closed down was not a good quality school, because if it was, somehow in your community, depending on your amount of people, the population of your town that you live in, if you got 1% of your enrollment, in my town I have 28,000 houses in my one town, but within around my school I have probably about maybe 80,000 population. And I only in this one location have about 450 students. That's about the capability that this school will offer depending on parking and the size of the facility and so on. And I find that it's really, you got to look at your population and find out even if you got 1% of your population, you'd probably have 150, 200 students in your area.
Mm-hmm.
I have a buddy who lives out in Colorado, and he started off talking to me, almost kind of sounded similar to you, about prices and about quality and about not selling out. And this was about 3 years ago. I said to him, listen, do what I do in Long Island and see how it works. Well, he went from a single school operation to having three schools within 2 years and having 190 students.
Well, what I try to do is not outprice myself in the market, because I got people that go, I mean, there's probably, I would say, between 5 and 10 schools in the area.
Doesn't matter, though.
You know,
doesn't matter. Let me tell you, if I could give you a word of advice,
sure.
Price yourself at where you think that you're worth.
Mm-hmm.
Do not price yourself according to your competition, because if you're doing exactly what they're doing, you could charge what they charge. But if you're a different person, you're a different personality. I don't know how professional you are, but if you are the most professional in the area, people are going to be willing to pay. I always say that, you know, there are people that will pay for a Volkswagen, there are people that will pay for a Ferrari. One car is $250,000, the other one's $30,000. There are people out there. How can you justify paying $250,000 for a car anywhere, shape, or form? No piece of metal is worth that kind of money, yet people are paying that money because they want the status, they want the quality of what that car promises, they want the ego and all that other stuff. You need to build that up in your school, that people feel privileged to be a part of your organization, as well as be able to get the benefits. It's the key is getting your benefits across to your students. If a kid's got better grades because of your martial art teaching and he's more respectful to his mom, do you think she's going to want to spend $10 extra a month? Absolutely. $20, $30. If you change that kid's life, $30 is nothing. I guarantee a parent would dip in their pocket and go to see a movie and see Shrek 2 and pay that kind of money. And there's no movie theaters are priced the same throughout the entire country. You know, does that make sense? It's like
it does make sense. And I know I listen to a lot of Zig Ziglar, and he says the same stuff.
Right.
But
well, don't second guess yourself.
I'll add to that a little bit.
Sure.
We recently we changed around the way we did things. We do year agreements now, where we never used to do that kind
right.
of thing before. We raised our prices. We and in some cases dramatically, and we were worried about those same things. And it, you know what? It's afterthought.
Absolutely.
A few people drop out, but more come. And replace them. As long as you are doing what you're doing at your school is professional and
right.
worth it. If your curriculum is there, you can
yes.
do whatever you want within reason.
Absolutely, within reason. You know, we can't price gouge. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? There's some guys out there that are charging exorbitant amount of money for. I have a friend who runs a kung fu school in Boston, charges $450 per month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if guys are getting that price. You know, he had like 800 students, and he went down to like maybe 600 students when he raised his price. So he lost 200 people and doubled his income. You know, so
wow.
It's like, you know, it's a you know, he had 200 less parents that could yell at him and moan and groan that little Johnny didn't get their belt on time and that, you know, ones fell down. And, you know, it really all depends on where you want to be. But one word of advice that I give to every school owner, because I've just been through it, is to trust in your instincts, believe in what you do, and don't let people's opinion waver you, because if that were the case, I would have quit years ago.
Right.
People have told me that, you know, because when I started doing contracts, all my staff at the time said, it's never going to work. When I started a black belt club, they said, it's never going to work. So now when I say things, I never ask anyone's opinion. I just say, this is what you're going to do, and you're going to make it work. But you can't, you know, contracts are, or I call them agreements. I very rarely say contract. To
exactly.
me, you can't get a bad rap if you say to somebody up front, listen, the only way we do it is you sign for a 12-month period of time because we want to know that we have commitment from our students.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you sign a 3-year agreement that you say, listen, this is the deal. Sign it now. It's like when people buy a car and they sign for a car, they can't say 6 months down the road, I don't want the car anymore. You know, and when people quit and they change their phone numbers, I'm really adamant about letting people get away with murder. So I'll go after them. Sometimes I've taken people to small claims court. I don't care about the money. I care about the principle. And if
right.
people take advantage of me, I'm really insulted. But if they came to me and it was a hard luck story, like, you know, we have a school in New York City where we had a lot of people who had a problem with when the Twin Towers came down and families were broken up, I would bend over backwards.
But they have to come to you first, and that's
exactly.
the reason why I went to APS.
Treat you like a person.
Before when I had did my in-house billing, they would just stop coming and they
yeah.
would just ignore you.
Yeah, because
and now they're forced to have to come to grips with
exactly.
talking with you.
Exactly.
And they get very nasty, you know, and sometimes, and I'm like, you know what? I mean, we had a good relationship in the past. And
right.
I don't need to be treated like this. And, you know, all you do is come to me and I would talk to
right,
you.
Right, but some people won't. And
you
money
know,
money is like talking about religion, money, and politics. Those are the three things that people try to avoid, and most people will only end up saying, you know, they'll get mad at you because they – my buddy Joe Puglio, again, he had said to me when people are angry with him, he always asks them, do you owe me – he asks them, do you owe me money? And they'll say, yes, I do, a matter of fact. He says, well, if you pay me your money, you won't be mad at me anymore. You know, it's kind of a little joke that he is running. But it's true, though, because, you know, if you've ever been, and I have been, in a position where I was poor and people, bill collectors, would call me, and I knew rightfully so that I charged money on the credit card and I was late with my payments, and then the bill collector called me and I was mad at them. And I tried to make up a reason why their credit card company stunk and why that I'm not happy with them, because I knew deep down inside I was just stroking my ego. I knew I owed them money. I knew I was wrong. That's why these people fight with you and they get mad at you, because they know that they signed up. They know they're committed to you. They looked you in the face and told you that. And, you know, hey, they just got to live up to what they promised. That's all. And what kind of moral values are they teaching their children? Or, you know, as a student of the martial arts, are you going to let – if you let them get away with it and let them walk all over you, you're telling them pretty much that the next client that knows them could do the same thing.
Yeah, and that's one thing I had to reestablish, was the fact that when they sign agreements – and I got to be careful what I tell people when I sit down and talk to them, because
right.
pretty much I do all my own sales right now
right.
because I really can't find somebody that can do it
sure.
as passionately as I can and get
yeah.
my point across. And the one thing I was doing is giving, you know, doing down payments where they pay a portion of the down payment up front.
Right.
So that, you know, it commits them. I don't know if that's the wrong thing to do.
No, that's a good thing to do. I mean, a lot of people that are on the line are probably doing that. They're taking a higher deposit. They're getting the deposit up front so that the tuition rates are lower.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's all just a sales method. But, yeah, that's good. But, you know, again.
I mean, but how much is too much? And
there's never. Let me tell you this. Back to my buddy Joe Puglio again. He was like one of my mentors in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
He once had a woman come in his office with her child, pregnant. And she was 6 months pregnant, and he said, hey, why don't we sign up your child? He goes, well, you know, I want to sign him up. He goes, no, how about the unborn child? And he actually sold her a membership for a $3,000 cash-out black belt membership to her unborn child.
Wow.
And they paid $3,000 in cash. You know why? Because he asked. And you know what? That kid was born, and now to this day is a black belt in his school.
Wow.
But you know what? Who would ever ask for something like that? You know, in the Bible they say if you ask, you shall receive.
Right.
You just got to ask the right questions and be morally have moral integrity about it. You know, we don't want to sell people stuff that's false, because we're supposedly, which I know is not the truth, but in the martial art industry, we're supposed to have the most integrity and morals and ethics out of any industry, and I don't find that to be the truth.
Hey.
But
sorry, go ahead.
Then we need to really stay on. If we're on track with that, we need to really, really, you know, we have no problem doing what we're doing.
I just, I wanted to kind of go a little different direction.
Sure.
Getting off of the contracts, kind of what we started off talking about.
Okay.
Being the developing multiple schools.
Right.
I did multiple school development a little bit different than most people, because I started in a small town.
Okay.
And then I moved into the big city.
Great.
And we just overtook the number one school in town. We've been here about a year.
Awesome.
So we're excited. My problem is that with putting so much energy into this new school and time.
Right.
Is I'm seeing a fall off in my two smaller town schools.
Well, that's the biggest problem that I said in the beginning.
And that's what I'm trying to figure out. If you have any tips for how to... You know, I mean, how to sit there and keep up those smaller schools, not only with the staff, because
right.
I've got a great manager out there, of course,
yeah.
bragging he's on the line. But
sure.
But, you know, I've got a good manager out there, but when it comes to things like advertising dollars,
right.
it makes a lot more sense now that we're
multi-school.
More multi-school to you know, focus it on the mass media in the area
right.
and in the larger, more affluent community.
Well, I mean, I it's so hard for me to like, kind of pinpoint like this in, like, I think we only have 5 minutes left, right, Joanne?
Yeah.
Yeah, so for a multi-school owner, there's so many things that you need to look at. And like you said, that's why I said, unless you have the hardcore school that's totally a huge success, I don't recommend that for anybody, but it seems like you did have that, and now that you opened, of course, you put more effort into the new schools, and now the old schools are falling back a little. What
right.
you need to do is look and find out what, by stepping to school number two, what is missing now from school number one? What did you take away from school number one by going to school number two, and now you got to make sure your staff is doing that?
Okay.
You know, like, if, for instance, like if you were the main salesperson in school number one,
mm-hmm.
and now you passed the torch to your staff member, and you went over to sales to school number two, but now you find that you're not getting enrollments. What you need to do is realize that fact and go back and retrain and make that staff member better than you at what you're missing out on. I couldn't say unless I came there and sat in your school to see exactly what you did and what you took away. But that's what you need to do. You got to analyze and look at the numbers. And for everybody who's on the line, you need to have huge stats. You have to keep your stats from, like, how much toilet paper you use to how many belts a month that you buy to how many people are quitting every single month, how many people are joining. I think that a lot of people out there have a lot of false numbers. They're not saying it because they are lying, but sometimes people don't realize how many people quit a year, how many people join a year, how many people are, you know, not paying that are training on your floor, how many people that are on the special, quote, discount family plans that we worked out because Mrs. Smith is a single mom and she has three kids and we're letting them train for $12 a month. That's where sometimes our inflated numbers of 150, 200 students, we're actually going broke and not making a profit.
Can I interrupt for just a second?
No. Yes, of course.
Actually, that brings to mind, I read a really interesting article by Stephen Oliver. I'm on his mailing list, and he was saying a lot of how people, impressing that point that Allie had just made about keeping very, very clear-cut numbers and knowing exactly what's going on in your school. You know, he had asked a friend how many members they had, and they said they had 600 members, but actively taking class, there were 75 people.
Right.
And he was calculating every single member who had ever signed up and expired from the point in time that he opened his school.
Right.
So, you know, that makes a huge point. I know that we had mentioned kind of sitting down and figuring out what your goals are from where you stand right now. And a lot of that really does start with the basics, and the basics are knowing where you do stand, and that's, you know, with true, honest numbers.
Right, without a doubt. And you know what? I sometimes talk to my staff members, and I go, hey, guys, what's our enrollment up to in West Islip? That's my main headquarters school. And we just had a number of, my students said 468 members in this one school. And he said, but we have to take 16 of them off. So I said, well, just, you know, tell me that we had, you know, 452 rather than 468. But, you know, sometimes it's better to say the big number first. What we really need to do is continually look at the reality of who's paying and who's training. And if they're paying and they're not training, eventually they're going to be quitting and not paying.
Exactly.
So that's what we need to look at. I want to, Joanne, we're pretty much almost out of time, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want to offer to every single person out there, listen, I'm not anything other than a martial artist. I train and I teach. I'm available for all you guys. At any time you have any question, there is no silly question in the world. All you have to do is call up APS or you could email me, and I'm going to give everyone my email address. And please, I mean, I mentor and work with people all over, and I learn from them and they learn from me. So please email me any questions, and we could help each other. My email is Renshi, R-E-N-S-H-I. R-E-N-S-H-I-L-I, like Long Island, L-I, Ninja, N-I-N-J-A, at AOL.com. Let me say that again, R-E-N-S-H-I-L-I-N-I-N-J-A at AOL.com. You could also reach me on my website, and please take advantage. It's a free site, and it's got tons of stuff from John Gaston. There's going to be contributing authors from APS like Jeff Cohen and Joanne. It's takingittothenextlevel.com. That's taking, T-A-K-I-N-G, it, I-T, 2, T-O, the, T-H-E, next level, N-E-X-T, level, L-E-V-E-L.com. And you guys could go on there and download information. It's a free site, but there's a premium section that I encourage all you guys to get involved with that's going to have loads of free ads and free information, dojo tours. It's going to be unbelievable stuff that's going to take off where all the companies like Natma and Maya are, you know, are kind of lacking in a little bit in the areas, in certain areas. We're going to try to help and fill that gap.
Okay.
All right. In wrapping up, I just want to kind of take what Allie had said about taking it to the next level and just kind of impress upon you guys what we're trying to accomplish with not only that site but bringing Allie on board. You guys all have very specific and very different needs depending on where you are in your career right now. Allie has pretty much been through the ringer and had his experience, mistakes and failures and tons of success. And he wants to be able to provide, as do we want to be able to provide you guys with that wisdom so that you can kind of take that, looking at your goals and make a decision where it is you want to go and find the important steps and the necessary basics to get there.
Right.
Taking it to the next level, the stuff that's on there now is just absolutely excellent. It really hits home. It's very detailed, and it really does touch all your bases. And we're going to be taking that a step further with the premium level. Allie's going to be here working with us to answer any of your questions. I really want to encourage everybody to get a little more involved in the consulting end. Send me an email to consulting@apsfinancial.com. You know, if you have a question, Allie can answer it. You know, I can answer it. Other people here can try to help you, you know, to find out what, you know, what your goals are and how you can succeed and achieve all of those and blow them out of the water and just
sure.
keep moving on.
Yeah, and one last thing in closing. I would say that the biggest thing is to trust and just be able to say, hey, listen, people are out there that can help you, and no matter what level you're at, whether you have 350 students or zero students, you could get advice that will save you tons of mistakes and time and money. So take advantage of that. I want to thank everybody for being on. I hope you guys enjoyed the phone's conversation today.
And oh, I did.
Please email me if you have any comments or questions. Check us out on the radio, too, if you want. I have a radio show on Tuesday nights from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can check us out at WLIE.com. You could actually go on the Internet and listen to the radio show. WLIE.com. It's Tuesday nights from 9 to 10 p.m., and it's all on martial arts and all the philosophies and spirituality that involves the martial arts.
Tuesday 9 to 10.
9 to 10 on Tuesday nights.
Great.
New York time.
Allie, what's your extension over at APS?
I don't have one as of yet. My phone extension?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, call into the sales and consulting department. The number is 888-277-4409.
Mm-hmm.
Or probably one of the best ways to reach Allie is to send him an email.
Yeah, email is great for me, and I could spend hours with you guys on emails.
One other thing that I just want to say in closing, too, we did decide, as Allie had said, we're having another conference call next week at 4 so that people on the West Coast or people who teach a little bit, or, you know, I have a lot of clients who do 2 to 3 pickup from schools and have time to sit in the office from 3 to 4. So that's going to be in the next conference call next week at 4. If any of you guys, I know the majority of what I'm seeing are East Coasters over here on this call.
Great.
But you guys are more than welcome to join in to kind of continue the conversations you were having today.
Great. Joanne, you're awesome.
Guys, I try. You're better.
Everybody, thank you very much. I hope you got something out of it, and I hope I was able to help. And I'm sorry if I was long-winded on anything.
No, that was great. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, always. Take care, Joanne.
Thanks, guys.
Email me, okay?
Will do.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.